Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu. Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at mathworks.com.
From WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point for those waiting on the edge of their seats for President Bush's first power play with his GOP-controlled Senate. The wait was not long. On the first day of his new majority, the president immediately renominated appellate court nominees Charles Pickering of Mississippi and Priscilla Owen of Texas. Both had been rejected by Democrats who had questioned Pickering's commitment to civil rights and Owen's views on abortion and the rights of business. 28 other Bush nominees, earlier ducked or defeated, were put forward at the same time. Democrats are now threatening to filibuster over Pickering. Republicans say it's high time for Pickering and other qualified judges to get a fair hearing and confirmation. Tonight on Point, bloody ideological battle over the U.S. courts. We begin in Washington with David Savage, Supreme Court correspondent for the Los Angeles Times. I asked him what's at the heart of this instant controversy in the Senate's new session.
Well, the real controversy is renominating Charles Pickering, the judge from Mississippi who was voted down by the Judiciary Committee last year. I think it was pretty obvious that Bush was going to go ahead with a lot of conservative judges. He ran on that issue in the fall. He won. The Republicans were angry at the way the Democrats had treated some of his judges. But I sort of thought that they might stay away from the Pickering controversy because of the Trent Lott debacle.
Remind us of the Pickering case and the Trent Lott connection.
Well, Pickering is an ally and sort of a protege of Trent Lott. As you know, Trent Lott got into trouble at Strom Thurmond's 100th birthday party, seeming to speak fondly about segregation. Thurmond had run on a segregation platform in 1948, and Lott made that comment about we would all be better off if Strom had won. Eventually, you know, had to step down as a Republican leader over it, and it put, I thought, and I think most people thought, sort of an unfortunate light on the race issue and the South.
How does Charles W. Pickering figure into that story?
Well, a lot of the criticism about Pickering involves civil rights and race cases. I'll tell you the one that got the most attention. I sat through that long hearing in the day.
And we should say, if you'll excuse me, David,
sure.
that Charles Pickering is a Mississippi judge, and Trent Lott has been one of his biggest backers in Washington.
Yes, that's why Pickering was nominated. Lott pressed the White House. They were not too enthused about Pickering. He was 65 years old. They actually like younger conservatives, but they went ahead and nominated Pickering.
To the Fifth Circuit in New Orleans.
Yes, that's right. He would move from being a federal trial judge to the Fifth Circuit in New Orleans.
Mm-hmm.
During the hearing, the Democrats brought out the fact that in 1994, Pickering had been presiding over the trial in a cross-burning case. A young guy, early 20s, went out with two others, burned a cross on the lawn of a black family's home and shot bullets into the house. The young man was convicted. His name was Swan.
Mm-hmm.
And Pickering then had a secret meeting where he demanded that the prosecutors come into a meeting with him. And he essentially pressed them and said, if you don't agree to a lenient sentence in this case, I'm going to reverse the conviction and throw out the charges.
Is this standard procedure?
No. I mean, I thought this was a problem on two counts. A lot of the members of the committee who are lawyers said they'd never heard of a judge holding sort of a private secret meeting to press the prosecutors in a pending case. You're supposed to do that. You know, it's supposed to be open in court with both sides there. And secondly, they didn't understand why Pickering was so interested in this particular case and this particular issue. So it sort of highlighted a day where the Democrats brought forth a lot of cases where Pickering had taken a fairly stingy or conservative attitude about civil rights cases, race discrimination cases.
Mm-hmm.
And so to sort of answer your question, race and civil rights were the key issues that caused the Democrats to vote Pickering down. Again, 10-9 vote in the Judiciary Committee.
So a party line vote in the Judiciary Committee put that nomination down, never went to the floor.
That's exactly right.
Priscilla Owen of Texas is also drawing controversy. Why in that case?
Big business, Enron, that sort of thing. She was an oil and gas lawyer in Houston in the early 90s. The Republicans got behind her and got her elected to the Texas Supreme Court. And I must say, if you were in the oil and gas industry or some other big business in Texas, she'd be a wonderful person to have on the state Supreme Court because she regularly voted to throw out verdicts that went against business and in favor of consumers and injured persons.
Was she accused of conservative bench activism?
Yes. There's nothing wrong with the woman in the sense that she is, I think, smart, came across as pleasant, capable, articulate, but quite sort of pro-business, conservative on all those types of cases and issues. And you remember her case, her nomination came up in the wake of Enron, so the Democrats were a little more focused on the business cases. There were 6 or 8 or 10 cases discussed during the day, and she just always voted on the business side. And the Democrats argued we shouldn't promote that kind of person to the Fifth Circuit Court. The Republicans said she's a smart, capable, decent judge, a person who's got a solid record and richly deserves to be promoted. But she, too, lost on a 10-9 vote.
So that was the Judiciary Committee lineup before the midterm elections. Has the committee changed? Has the environment changed? President Bush has come back with, 29 or 30 nominations that he's bringing back for reconsideration. Is he assuming that the new majority in the Senate will change the outcome?
Yes, yes, because all you had to do was change about one vote in the Judiciary Committee. There now will be a one-vote Republican majority. They haven't met yet, so I can't honestly say, you know, the atmosphere has changed. But all the Republicans needed was a one-vote majority to get the president's nominations through. So I think the White House has every reason to expect that they can push through all these nominations.
Probably all 30. David Savage, step back with us then. Where does that leave the face of the American judiciary here at the midpoint in the Bush administration, given who's been nominated and confirmed so far, and if this next raft of 30 judicial nominees are likely to go through? How big is the imprint of George W. Bush? How has it moved the needle from left to right?
I think it's moved the needle a little bit to the right. I do think that some of the appeals court nominations are more symbols than of great practical significance. I cover the Supreme Court, and perhaps I have a bias for that reason, but most of the really big issues, for example, some of the liberal groups talked a lot about the right to abortion in the case of Owen and Pickering, but the appeals courts really don't decide things like the right to abortion. Those always sort of depend on what the Supreme Court says.
So why such fierce battles?
Partly it's the sort of ideological politics of the matter that the liberal groups really care about a lot of these cases, like the civil rights and the business cases. Mm-hmm. And appeals courts have some significance, but it is the case that Pickering and Owen, if confirmed, there will be 2 of 16 members on the U.S. Court of Appeals down in New Orleans. It's a fairly conservative court, and so that's why I say you move the needle a little bit to the right. Part of this is, I think, sort of posturing for and sort of setting up for the fact that the conservatives and liberals are expecting some Supreme Court battles in the next year or so.
And what does it say to you about the Bush administration's attitude coming out of the whole lot brouhaha? We've even heard the possibility that the president promised as part of Lott stepping aside in the Senate to bring Pickering back. Have you heard that? And if not, what does it say that he's ready and willing to do it?
I was surprised on that one. I had talked to some of the White House lawyers during the time of the Lott debacle, and they pretty much said they didn't think it was wise to refight that issue. In fact, they even sort of posed it as, why would Pickering want to go through all that again? But one thing we've learned about George Bush is that he doesn't back away or back down. He's a fairly strong conservative and doesn't sort of split the middle. He sort of goes for the full conservative agenda, and this had to be his decision to go ahead and go back with Pickering again.
Well, he's going for it right now. David Savage, thank you for joining us.
Glad to do it.
David Savage covers the Supreme Court for the Los Angeles Times. He spoke with us earlier from Washington. Are Senate Democrats borking a reasonable nominee here? Or is Judge Charles Pickering the wrong man for a high court? Is Priscilla Owen just what the doctor ordered? Are you surprised to see Trent Lott's fingerprints on a GOP nominee just weeks after his own debacle? You can join the conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me in the studio tonight is Randall Kennedy, professor of law at Harvard University. Good evening and welcome, Randall Kennedy. Good to have you back.
Thank you so much.
And with us from Washington, D.C. tonight, Larry Klayman, chairman and general counsel for Judicial Watch, a conservative watchdog group that tracks the U.S. judiciary. Good evening and welcome, Larry Klayman.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks for being with us. Randall Kennedy, here we are. We're back in nominee season, and right away it's blood all over the floor. Why?
Why is because these positions are very important positions. The judiciary is the third branch of government. It's a powerful policy-making branch of government. These judges matter a lot at every level, the district court judges, the court of appeals judges, and, of course, the Supreme Court justices.
Is it about justice? Is it about political philosophy?
Well, I mean, different people have different conceptions of justice. And, judges are policy-making people. They are not the same as electoral politicians, but they are policymakers like electoral politicians. And so these positions actually matter concretely in people's lives, and so, that's why it matters.
So when you see Charles Pickering Jr. back before the Senate, and Priscilla Owen for that matter, what's your response?
My response is that this shows quite clearly that the president has is giving his judicial picks over to the right wing of the Republican Party, and he is showing that he's going to stick with that strategy and allow the right wing of the Republican Party to push its agenda through judicial nominations.
And given Charles Pickering's background in particular, the story of him leaning on federal prosecutors to go lenient on the cross burner in Mississippi, I guess there's two issues there. The substantive issue of whether he should ask for leniency, and secondly, the way he did it secretly. Is that grounds to object in itself to his nomination?
Well, it probably is, but quite frankly, I think that one difficulty in a lot of these fights over nominees is that people sort of think that the only reason to object to someone is if you can find them doing something wrong, if you can find scandal. Mm-hmm. Frankly, there are many people who are honorable people, who are honest people, who haven't done anything, you know, scandalously wrong, but who should not be elevated to a position on a federal court of appeals. So, frankly, even if it were the case that these aspects of this man's background were not part of his record, I would still want the Senate to refuse to confirm him and be willing to say he's a perfectly decent, honorable man. He just shouldn't be confirmed to a lifetime appointment on the federal bench.
Larry Klayman, what do you think of that assessment first of Charles Pickering?
I disagree with it, but before I get to it,
yes.
One of the things that the American people need to understand is how we pick judges. And the framers of the Constitution were very enlightened people, very brave. I believe they did obviously an excellent job. The country's held together now for 227 years. Mm-hmm. But they made one basic mistake, and that was how you select federal judges. And they give the power to the president to do it. It occurs through political patronage, whether it is a judge or a U.S. attorney, a prosecutor.
And what's the mistake in that, Larry Klayman?
The mistake is that we have a political process which gives rise to their selection. So when the professor says that Bush is taking a hard tack to the right here, the fact is that Clinton, when he was president, took a hard tack to the left. And we get these gyrations in both directions. We are not choosing judges frequently on the basis of their legal ability or on the basis of how they write opinions, but on the basis of politics.
Has it always been thus?
It has always been that way. And frankly, that's why our federal judges in my assessment, and that's why I started Judicial Watch in 1994, the name Judicial Watch, Watch mm-hmm. Judges, mm-hmm. it was because of some experiences I had with federal judges who, frankly, were not suited for the bench. Some of them were even emotionally unstable. But these people were politicians put on the bench. And I would say 70% of the federal judges in this country probably shouldn't be there.
Larry Klayman, that's a big number. We've got to take a break. We're talking with Larry Klayman and Randall Kennedy tonight about the fresh Bush administration push for conservative courts and what we ought to see on the courts and who ought to end up there and how. You can join the conversation. What does it say that the president's first push in the new Congress is for Trent Lott's handpicked judicial nominee, the defender of a cross-burner? We're at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about the fresh Bush administration push for conservative courts. My guests tonight are Randall Kennedy, professor of law at Harvard University. His latest book is Interracial Intimacies, Sex, Marriage, Identity, and Adoption. And joining us from Washington tonight, Larry Klayman, chairman and general counsel for Judicial Watch. You can join us as well. How deep is the cavern here between Republicans and Democrats, conservatives and liberals over the scales of justice? And when the bloody battles are over, are you confident of a fair trial, of honest justice in America? You can join us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Larry Klayman, you were saying that the framers got it a little bit wrong, that they introduced...
They got it a lot wrong.
Okay, way wrong. Now, it introduced politics. It introduced, you're saying, an enormous number of judges at the top level who are not fit for that position, but how might it be otherwise?
Well, it might be otherwise by selecting them on the basis of merit, having merits panels that really are not dependent on the president. It'll take constitutional amendment, granted, to change it, but a system where they're selected by merits panels of independent experts, not of politicians.
But how could that possibly exist? I mean, we are a fundamentally politically country. How would you keep politics?
It exists in many other countries,
mm-hmm.
and this country is an anomaly in that respect. The other thing is we pick judges out of the private sector or out of government. If they're a prosecutor, they tend to think like prosecutors. If they're a defense lawyer, they tend to think like a defense lawyer. It's a little bit like Dr. Strangelove. In other foreign countries, before you can even qualify to be a judge, you have to go to a special school and learn how to be a judge and learn how to have the appropriate temperament. And that's a problem in this country. We don't have judges. We have a good legal system, but it's a little bit like owning a Ferrari and having to drive at 55 miles an hour. With a deficiency in the judges that we have, and particularly in the federal bench, frequently even the best legal arguments don't carry the day. Now, that being said, Judge Pickering is being demonized unfairly on the race issue. This is the use of the race card by the Democrats.
How do you see the demonization?
Because he's not a racist. In fact, he's taken very strong stands throughout his career against the Ku Klux Klan. He's gotten recommendations not just from Medgar Evers and other civil rights leaders, but from former Vice President Gore's own brother-in-law, Frank Hunger.
And the cross-burning case, how do you interpret that?
Well, that, you know, we really don't know what happened behind closed doors. This is all hearsay. I don't believe he did it. I could be wrong. In an ex parte way, both sides were there. Judges can't meet ex parte, and they frequently do things in chambers when they talk about trying to resolve cases. And people talk off the record, and that's what judges are supposed to do. This is a political manipulation by the Democrats to try to score some points. But also, it is likely that as part of the deal that Trent Lott struck when he stepped down, you know, he just got a new committeeship.
Yes, he did.
He's head of the Rules Committee in the Senate. He probably threw in Judge Pickering as part of his deal for
stepping down. Put my man on the bench and I'll step aside quietly along with the rest.
But the judge should not be condemned simply because Trent Lott is a racist. That doesn't mean that he's a racist.
But what about Randall Kennedy's point? Randall Kennedy says whether or not he acted appropriately in the case of the young cross-burner in Mississippi in privately seeking for a more lenient sentence and threatening, we're told, to overturn the conviction if he didn't get it, whether or not that's the case, Randall Kennedy says he's simply in his record is not fit for a higher bench.
Well, Randall Kennedy probably doesn't like him because philosophically Randall Kennedy is to the left. And this judge is to the right. But what I'm saying is that is not a basis to disqualify a judge. In this country, mm-hmm. under our Constitution, the president has his constitutional prerogative to select them. And he's obviously going to select people which he thinks are more similar to his views than to the other side. And that's why we have elections. That's why we voted for President Bush in terms of the Electoral College.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what it's all about.
Randall Kennedy, let me put that to you. Larry Klayman says, get over it. This is the outcome of the election. This is who Bush wants. He's following the Constitution. He's now got a majority in the Senate. So, of course, this guy can be confirmed if the president wants him confirmed.
Couple of points here. Number one, the president is given the authority to nominate. The Senate, the senators, are given the authority to confirm, to vote to confirm or vote to withhold confirmation. Of course, the President of the United States has the prerogative to nominate whom he wishes, but senators also have the prerogative to say no. And all I'm saying, and here I think that Mr. Klayman and I agree, that as things are, this is a matter of politics. The President of the United States has said straightforwardly he wants conservative jurists. Fine. That's his position.
So you're making a political critique of the nominee, not a legal critique or a competency critique. Is that right?
That's right. Yes.
Well, and that's our system,
So as far as I'm concerned, by the way, I mean, I do think that with respect to this particular nominee, there are some troubling issues that have been mentioned. But let's wash those away. I think that a senator is perfectly within bounds in saying this person's smart, this person is honest, this person is honorable, but I'm voting no because I think this person's conception of constitutional rights is simply a bad conception for our society.
And do you agree with Larry Klayman's assertion that Bill Clinton took an equally hard tack to the left in his nominees during his 8 years in office?
No, he didn't take enough. He didn't push things to the left enough. Bill Clinton, unlike George Bush, was unwilling to fight for judicial nominees, and so he was actually quite timid. If he thought that somebody was going to raise a fuss, he wouldn't nominate them.
So let's look at this.
Let me tell you something, Larry Klayman, interesting here, and that is that George W. Bush, this is why I do believe that Pickering was put forward as part of a deal to get Trent Lott to leave. George W. Bush has not put forward terribly conservative nominees. Most of them are middle of the road. They're very similar to the Clinton judges. I go in front of them every day. Randall is a professor, and I respect that, and that's very important at a very fine university, but I see how these people react on a minute-by-minute basis. They're not terribly conservative.
And yet we're told that it's the hard right of the Republican Party that George Bush is most concerned about pleasing with these nominations.
Well, he throws them a bone every now and then. This president is not terribly conservative. His compassionate conservative label is another word for I'm not really conservative.
Well, I suppose we could debate that for a long time. But Larry Klayman, Randall Kennedy, please stand by.
By the way, I'm critical of him on that because I wish he was more conservative.
We hear it. I want to welcome to our conversation U.S. District Court Judge Michael Mills, joining us from Oxford, Mississippi. He's known Judge Pickering for many years through Mississippi political and legal circles. Good evening and welcome, Judge Michael Mills.
Well, thank you, sir.
Thank you for joining us. Judge Mills, I'm sure that you watched the debate over Judge Pickering's nomination last time out. You saw him go down in that 10-9 defeat in the Judiciary Committee. Now he's back before the Senate. Is it appropriate for this judge to be back on the nominating board and put up for the high bench again?
Well, I think it is. I've known Judge Pickering for at least 15 years since he's been on the federal bench, and 4 years ago, I joined with him at his request, along with former Governor William Winter, of Mississippi to create the Institute for Racial Reconciliation here at Ole Miss. I know Judge Pickering's not a racist. I remember in 67, when I was 11 or 12 years old, when he testified against Sam Bowers in the Vernon Dahmer case. And that took a lot of courage for a young lawyer who was under 30 years of age with four children at home.
Remind us of that case, Judge Mills.
That was the case where Sam Bowers, the imperial wizard of the Ku Klux Klan, had been involved in firebombing Vernon Dahmer's home. Vernon Dahmer was attempting to register black voters. And was an African-American.
And Charles Pickering was there in that case.
He was, and was promised defeat as county prosecuting attorney the next year and was defeated.
Give us your interpretation of the 1994 case that's being held up every time his name is raised now, the cross-burning case where We read in the Washington Post, Judge Pickering, secretly is the word used, pressured federal prosecutors to give leniency to the convicted cross-burner and threatened to overturn the conviction if he didn't get it.
I will tell you what I know about it.
All right.
I believe that's the Swan case.
Yes.
And Mr. Swan was the person who, according to all the testimony, was drunk at the time this occurred. There was also a young 17-year-old man who was an avowed racist, and there was a third person who was mentally handicapped. They were the people involved. The 17-year-old got no time under plea bargaining. The person who was mentally incompetent got zero time. Mr. Swan was recommended for an 18-month sentence by the probation office. Mm-hmm. Judge Pickering gave him 27 months. The Justice Department, in addition to the 27 months, requested an additional 5 years because the crime involved fire. Mm-hmm. There's a federal statute which requires an additional 5 years. If fire is used for the destruction of property.
And that's what the Judge Pickering objected to.
Yes, because the circuits are split as to whether the congressional intent was to create an enhancement for arson.
So is it then fair, I guess what's going on right now is Democrats are sort of pulling the Trent Lott cloak over Judge Pickering and saying, Republicans, if you're not going to be hypocritical here, if you're turning away from Trent Lott, you've got to turn away from Charles Pickering.
Well, it's not fair to Charles Pickering. He is a person of unquestioned integrity. It is very unfair, I think, to accuse him of any racist intent whatsoever. He has served on numerous boards and commissions over the years to help bring the races together in Mississippi. And I, frankly, was very astounded when I saw what happened to him last year.
Randall Kennedy, are you willing to accept this explanation of what happened in the Swan case?
Yeah, I'm willing to accept it if it's true. And remember, my opposition to Judge Pickering does not depend on concluding that he is a racist or concluding that he's a man without integrity. I'm willing to stipulate for the sake of discussion that he is a man of integrity and that he is not a racist. But that doesn't qualify somebody to be elevated to the United States Court of Appeals.
Michael Mills, is this man qualified? Is he the right? Does he have the right cut of the jib, the right record?
Well, he's been affirmed 90% of the time in his trial cases. The cases have been appealed, and that's a record that all of us on the federal bench would like to have. So that indicates to me that he can understand the law. So I think he is competent. I think he's had an exemplary career, and I think it's very sad that we have reached the point where we are.
Judge Mills in Oxford, Mississippi, thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Thank you.
Judge Michael Mills joining us from Oxford, Mississippi. We have a lot of callers who want to join this conversation. Let's turn to them. Bill is on the line. Welcome, Bill. You're on the air.
Good evening.
Evening.
The next time you mention the phrase compassionate conservatism, can you warn us to go for our barf bags? And now let me get down to my comment. I forget, that's, first name is Larry.
Larry Klayman, who brought up compassionate conservatism, saying that he doesn't believe President Bush is a full-blooded conservative, at least not conservative enough for him.
My almighty. Look, there is no comparison during the Clinton years as to how the judges that Clinton put forward were treated and how the judges that, when the Democrats were in the Judicial Committee, the Republican nominees were treated. This has been a stacked deck from the very beginning to the very end. This is shameful. I cannot believe that what is passing for judicial material that the Republicans are putting forward.
You're saying you just aren't seeing the caliber of candidate that you want, Bill, or you don't like the politics of these judges?
I am not seeing the caliber of the candidate. Well, this is ideology-driven from the very, very beginning to the very, very end. I see no – one of your guests is arguing for – that the Democrats are being somewhat unreasonable in their examination of these people. My God, I remember what happened to the candidates that the Democrats put forward, and unbelievable what they went through, and the most ridiculous of accusations brought against them.
Bill, stand by. Larry Klayman, answer the charge.
Oh, is Bill a lawyer?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Bill, are you a lawyer, Larry Klayman asks.
No, I'm not.
Okay. So, I mean, you don't really have a basis to judge because you haven't been in front of these judges, but I have been in front of them. Let me tell you about the Clinton judges.
I can tell you, and it's the same is true with Republican judges, because we're a public interest group. We bring lawsuits against politicians that engage in government misconduct, that you can gauge, no matter what the case, almost with exact certainty, how judges are going to rule based upon their political affiliation. And during the Clinton years, in all these cases we brought against Bill Clinton, 90% of the time that we were in front of a Clinton judge, the cases were dismissed. 90% of the time, they're getting overturned on appeal and being sent back. Without regard to Judge Pickering, who I think has a very fine record and deserves to be a judge, 70% of the judges on the federal bench are political hacks, no matter who appointed them, whether it was Bill Clinton or whether it was George W. Bush. And that's unfortunate. So I agree with you generally, but not with this regard to this particular judge.
Bill?
This is a very esteemed jurist who, as the prior Judge Mills pointed out, is affirmed 90% of the time. And in fact, that's a remarkable record. Most of these judges get overturned more often than not.
Caller Bill, is that good enough for you?
No, it's not. Let me make a suggestion. If that's the case, let me buy your premise. Why doesn't Mr. Bush, or President Bush, if you will, God, I hate to use that phrase, but in any event, why doesn't he set an example and put forward nothing but the gems of the judiciary instead of these political hacks?
Because this guy is a gem. He is not a political hack, and he's being demonized for political purposes. The use of the race card is all too easy to use in this society. Now, Trent Lott deserved what he got because it was proven that he is a racist. But
Larry Klayman, stand by. And, Bill, thanks for your call. Randall Kennedy, what's your chapter and verse, then, on Charles Pickering? You're saying this one incident aside, he's not worthy. Why?
This position is a very important, powerful position, and as far as I'm concerned, one should have to show true distinction. I would ask Mr. Klayman. He just said that Charles Pickering is a gem. He said that he has a distinguished career. What's distinguished about his career?
The statistic that was cited by Judge Mills that he's upheld 90% of the time. You know,
why is that a sign of distinction? I'm sure that most judges
means he's making the correct decisions.
Why is that not a sign of distinction, Randall
and
Kennedy?
And the other side of the coin, Randall, is that it's not for you to say I want a leftist judge or I want a conservative judge. Unfortunately, the framers of our Constitution gave the right to the president.
What about the Senate? You keep saying that, but what about the Senate's power to confirm? Let's imagine, for the sake of argument, that I'm a senator. Why can't I say, listen, I don't want to confirm this person because this person's judicial politics are antithetical to mine?
But of course you can. Can't you? Isn't that the whole point?
Of course it's a political process. So. Well, but Mr. Klayman is saying that that's illegitimate, and all I'm saying is it's perfectly legitimate. And I hope that the Democrats will say we're not going to stand by and let the judicial branch be pushed further to the right. It's already to the right, by the way.
It's unfortunately not to the right at all. I would say it's quite to the left. President Clinton was to the left. He's proud of it. And over the course of 8 years, he put in so many judges that the overwhelming number of active judges these days are Democrats.
Not true. There are 11 of the 13 federal courts of appeal are Republicans, outnumber Democrats.
And I might add,
not to mention the Supreme Court of the United States.
I might add that overall, in the entire judicial system, it's mostly Clinton appointees today in terms of the percentages of active judges.
We'll come back and look at that, but we see the blood that's in the streets every time judges are on the line. We're looking at the Bush administration's fresh push for conservative courts tonight. Are the Democrats borking a reasonable nominee here? Or when the stakes are so high, is it any surprise that the process is so fierce? You can join us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about the fresh Bush administration push for conservative courts. My guests are Randall Kennedy, professor of law at Harvard University, and Larry Klayman, joining us from Washington, D.C. tonight, chairman and general counsel for Judicial Watch. You can join us as well. Will a conservative judiciary favor the authority of the state over the individual? Will a conservative bench favor private economic interests over the common weal? Is that what you want? We're at 1-800-423-8255. Adam's on the line. Hi, Adam. You're on the air.
Hi, how are you? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I wonder if I could ask your guests to step back a little bit from discussing this judge, these nominations, and move back to something you were on earlier about the process itself.
Yes, Larry Klayman was quite critical of that process.
Exactly. Well, it seems to me to be a little facile, maybe even ludicrous, to say we could somehow take politics out of the process. I mean, these judges are federal judges. They're going to be making decisions which are going to be politically influenced.
They sure are.
And I would say that rather than denying that or somehow trying to eliminate politics from the process, it might make more sense to acknowledge it and accommodate it somehow. But my question is really, could they talk about what a different new process might be? I mean, I agree. We've got a flawed one.
Well, I guess, I guess
ideas for a new one.
We'll go and we'll get those. I guess right now we pretty much do acknowledge and accept the politics here. Larry Klayman, though, respond to Adam. You said earlier that you would, I mean, some pretty stiff things. 70% of federal judges not really qualified. If I got that right.
That's my personal opinion after practicing law for 25 years.
Well, that says something disturbing to me. You were saying you'd prefer to see some kind of merit board making these choices. On the other hand, we heard you say that the judiciary is not conservative enough. So
when I say conservative, what I mean is following the law, following the strictures of the law rather than trying to create their own law. I'm not saying that I want people on the bench who necessarily agree with a conservative versus a liberal position.
But then what about Adam's question? Give us some more detail on how you would change this process.
Yeah,
isn't politics just baked in the cake of an American decision like this?
And this is based on my experience, and it's something that we need to study, frankly, and whether it can be done. But number one, as I said, to have experts, not people who were picked by politicians to send the person up that the president wants, but experts choose these judges on the basis of merit. Secondly, to make it as a prerequisite, like we do almost with tax lawyers, that they get formal training on how to be a judge, as occurs in Europe. Thirdly, to test them psychologically. I mean, I've seen plenty of crazy judges up there, believe me, in 25 years. These people, you wouldn't want making a ruling on anything, let alone being a federal judge. Fourthly, term limits. The fact that many of these judges are there for life allows them to make decisions with impunity, yes, but they don't care whether they're right or wrong. They're going to do a political favor for the people that appointed them. And a lot of times they want a higher position. They want to go from the lower court to the appellate court, from the appellate court to the Supreme Court, or get another appointment.
Which means playing to the political overlord. Randall Kennedy, you see the list here. Does this make sense to you, Randall Kennedy? Can we make this a more bloodless process, or is it finally, fundamentally, a political process, and that's just the country we've got?
I think that the caller was right that the law is infused with politics. When we talk about, you know, what is due process, what is reasonableness, what does equal protection of the law mean, there's no way to extricate politics from those sorts of judgments. So I think that this is inevitably a political matter, and it should be a political matter.
But
we should just be upfront about it, straightforward about it. We ought not allow, for instance, nominees to duck and weave and not answer questions.
So take them over the coals. That's what the Constitution says.
Yes, we should ask them what are your beliefs? What's the basis of your beliefs? We ought not allow nominees to obfuscate like they do now.
So when the Republicans
and just be straightforward.
When Republicans say, as they do now, and Democrats did before under Clinton, that their nominees are not being treated right, and there's great outrage over the treatment, is there still, after all these years of the Constitution, a kind of too delicate sensibility about what the nomination interrogation ought to entail?
In my view, yes. In my view, we're still caught up in a sentimental view of judges. We should...
That they walk on water, that they're
agreed
apart.
You can see it in news reports. After the elections, reporters said over and over again, well, the Republicans have now won both branches of the government. Mm. As if the judiciary isn't a branch of the government.
Mm-hmm.
It's a branch of the government. These are policymakers. We ought to... know what they think, and we ought to be tough in our evaluation.
Well, Randall has actually just made my point, is that, you know, we've won branches of government, yet he says that politics should play a role, and that's the problem in the system. If, for instance, the Democrats were true to their position during the Clinton years, and that lying under oath when sex is involved is no big deal, then they would be putting up judges based on their political judgment that it's okay to lie under oath and undercutting the law. So what I'm saying is that you put people up that are willing to follow the law, no matter the consequences, that aren't political hacks, and they'll make decisions on the basis of people that appointed them. And that should be the way we revise our system, because, as I said, I see every day not just Clinton-appointed judges, but I see Republican judges. Look at the judge that just dismissed the energy lawsuit by the Government Accounting Office against Dick Cheney. This was a Bush appointee, George W. Bush, and I could have predicted 8 months ago when that thing was filed that George W. Bush's appointee was going to get rid of that lawsuit.
Larry Klieman, let me put your points to Randall Kennedy. Randall Kennedy, your politics are clearly different from Larry Klieman's,
right.
But on his buffering points here, should we have judges appointed by a panel of experts? Should there be prerequisite of formal training? Should there be psychological testing and term limits? Would that change the profile?
I mean, listen, I want smart people. I want, intelligent people. I want people who are of sound mind. But, I mean, frankly, that should be the that should almost be an of course. That should go without saying.
But apparently does not, if we're to believe Larry Klieman.
I don't believe that to be the case.
The idea
of experts. I mean, who would appoint the experts, for goodness sake?
Yeah, and there's the politics. Larry, Randall Kennedy, please stand by. I want to welcome into our conversation Elizabeth Cavendish. She's legal director for NARAL Pro-Choice America, joining us from Washington. Elizabeth, bring us back to the nominees who George Bush is putting up right now. What's your view on the Pickering front, on the Priscilla Owen front? What do you think of the 30 who have been put up by the president?
Well, the 14 Court of Appeals nominations Bush made January 7th, yesterday, six have clear anti-choice records, and none has any hint of a pro-choice outlook. So from that, we can conclude that an anti-choice litmus test is probably part of President Bush's screening or evaluation of these judges, and we're gravely concerned because reproductive rights are in peril and these judges can be part of a patient, relentless, long-term strategy to take away a woman's right to choose.
So here you are as a full political participant and you're saying there's an anti-choice litmus test. We don't like that. So you're opposing these nominations. But does it mean, in your view, that, I mean, if there's a Republican majority and they approve them, isn't that just the way politics go? You've just lost at the polls.
Well, the Constitution provides for advice and consent, and President Bush is not seeking the advice of the Senate before making any of these nominations, failing to consult with any Democratic home state senators, and just pursuing a strongly ideological agenda. I haven't heard the whole hour, but I'd take issue with Larry's characterization that the Clinton nominees were all very left-wing. I think that President Clinton was typically consulting with the Senate and picking many moderate centrist judges. By contrast, the Bush nominees are much more of an ideological extreme bent on the right, in our judgment.
Elizabeth Cavendish, are you then concerned that in this term or perhaps a following term of George W. Bush, you may see abortion rights overturned in the Supreme Court on this wave of conservative judges?
Absolutely. And meanwhile, choice is being chipped away in the lower courts. I think this is going on outside public view, and people have long recognized the importance of the Supreme Court nominations and have long counted the whittling away of support for Roe from 7-2, and now we're in a 5-4 situation on women's right to choose. But in the lower courts, these state restrictions and federal restrictions are being reviewed on a much more day-to-day basis and typically being finally resolved in the lower court. So these lower court judges are very much part and parcel of a strategy to chip away at a woman's right to choose in the interim and to overturn it in the long run.
So the issues are very real. Elizabeth Cavendish, thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Glad to be here.
Elizabeth Cavendish is legal director for NARAL Pro-Choice America. Willie's calling from Madison, Wisconsin. Hi, Willie. You're on the air.
Hi. Please, thank you for having me on.
Good to have you.
Someone from a state that has two people on the Senate committee.
Mm-hmm.
Twice you have used Judge Bork's name as a verb and described you know, which carries with it the implication that it was a terrible and unjust thing to, that was done to him. Yet this was a man who, in Griswold versus Connecticut, said that there was no inherent right in, to privacy. Even a married couple in their own bedroom was subject to the laws of the state as to what they could do and what they could use for birth control.
Larry, forgive me if I've been playful with that, but we know it's been made a verb, and we know it's been made a verb, and it's a political verb.
Hello?
Sorry, we're here.
Yeah, let me just run the second one, and then I'll turn off the air.
Yeah.
Because I have to get back to work here. The other one, every time we have a Senate confirmation of a Supreme Court judge, I see great legal minds like Lawrence Tribe and Guido Calabresi. They come up there and they testify for or against whatever or whatever, have great things to say, interesting points, even if I disagree with them. Yet, why don't these guys ever get nominated to the Supreme Court? Why not the best? You know, why not the top people in our law schools, our top legal thinkers, instead of people who are young and of the proper color, like Uncle Clarence, and you know, other things like that.
Well, and the reason
is politically convenient.
The reason is
Larry Klayman.
What we've been talking about throughout this hour is that it's political patronage. Many of these judges spend time working for political parties. They campaign early on to get the job. Some of them are even fundraisers. They raise money for the president or his political party. Several years ago during the Clinton administration, there was a judge in Miami by the name of Bud Stack. They brought him up for a confirmation hearing. They asked him about various cases, landmark cases. He couldn't even figure out what they were about. He had raised $7 million for President Clinton. Now, his nomination was killed. It should have been killed, and that's an appropriate circumstance to do it. But that is our system. And frankly, when it comes to judges, we're the laughing stock of the world when it comes to selecting them.
Randall Kennedy, Willie raises some interesting points here, but I guess his fundamental question is, why not the best? Is there a way to get a better quality judge?
Exactly right.
Well, would we agree on what a better quality judge, even if we saw it, Randall Kennedy?
No, we wouldn't agree. This is controversial territory. It is inevitably political. Just little point, the caller mentioned Guido Calabresi. Guido Calabresi actually sits on the United States Court of Appeals for the Second Circuit.
So he's in there.
He is a very distinguished jurist, the sort of jurist that ought to be on a court of appeals, unlike Judge Pickering.
And Randall Kennedy, your final thoughts looking out across this landscape. Are we headed into an era of judgments that you welcome or not?
No, we're not, because, first of all, the Senate Democrats are probably going to be unwilling to invest in a strong enough effort to prevent the judiciary from sinking further to the right. So I think that what's ultimately going to happen is that we're going to see most of these nominees confirmed, and we, the citizenry, are going to reap the consequences.
And the reason for that is that over the centuries, there has developed a practice, which has become law, that you defer to the selection of the president, and it's occurred throughout our history. It's nothing new.
And there you are, politics right at the middle of it. Ain't That America? Larry Klayman, Chairman and General Counsel for Judicial Watch in Washington, D.C., thank you so much for joining us tonight. And Randall Kennedy here in our studios, Professor of Law at Harvard University. His latest book is Interracial Intimacies, Sex, Marriage, Identity, and Adoption. Randall, thanks very much for being with us tonight.
Thank you very much.
Listeners, you can continue this conversation online. Go to onpointradio.org and click on Forums. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
Cassettes and CDs of On Point are available for $15. Go to onpointradio.org or call 1-800-909-9287.
This is WBUR. We're funded by you.